Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by The Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode.
All right. Hello and welcome to part three of our official podcast drop. Thank you so much for joining. If this is the first podcast you are listening to, welcome. We have got a great episode for you today.
Yes. And please like this episode and give it a five-star rating and leave a comment if you like. That's good for our algorithm, good for us to get feedback so we know how you're liking these podcasts. If you don't already follow the Virago Project on Instagram, please do so. You can follow us at the Virago Project. And you can also check out our website where we give updates about our programs, where you can shop our merchandise, and where you can read our blog. So that is www.viragoproject.org.
All right. So today we have an awesome podcast. I don't think it'll be too confusing for you, but we've got the other Taylor, as we called her at the beginning here. So two Taylors, Taylor Tracy, Taylor Heatherly coming on. I met Taylor back in high school. She was actually friends. We were co-maid of honors at my sister Rachel's wedding. And we have a great podcast today where we talk a lot about body positivity, retiring from sports. And it's really a great episode for people who are currently in sports or after. So we got a lot of good topics to cover today.
Yeah, totally. And we talk a lot about transitioning. And I know that that's something that a lot of former athletes struggle with, especially if you just either retired from your sport, graduated from college. It's like, okay, how do I make this transition? Everything is, you know, kind of starting anew and I have to figure myself out all over again. So Taylor gives a ton of insight on how she sort of navigated that time throughout her life. And I think that there is so much good information in this. So here we go.
Is that? Oh, perfect. The other Taylor.
Hello.
Hey.
Oh, wait. How is this? Wait a minute. How is this possible? Oh, now I know. Hold on. Is there a way that I can join it online? Do I just type in this Anchor FM? Oh, whoa.
Yes. I think I also sent it to your email. So if you click link in your email, it should work there too.
Okay.
I was just telling other Taylor some about how we met, how you're Rachel's friend. But I think we almost had a class together in high school at one point too. Because I feel like you were always in like honors English and math. So I feel like we somewhere crossed, but
yeah, I think we had a math class together.
Yes. Okay. So obviously, you know, I'm Emily and this is the other Taylor.
Hey, it's Taylor.
A little dual Taylor action today. Okay. Well, I'm really excited. So I mentioned I know Taylor back from high school in the suburbs of Chicago, but can you tell our listeners a brief history of your athletic background today?
Yeah, so I grew up playing both soccer and basketball. Actually, I secretly wanted to be a dancer. I always wanted to be a varsity soccer player, varsity Poms, but now I just, you know, dance on my own in my car or wherever. And I grew up in, as I said, the Chicago suburbs, and I played high school soccer and club soccer for an elite club called Ela Elite. And then after high school, I went and attended and played soccer at Baylor University for 4 years. And that was just such a highlight of my life all 4 years. When I came and was recruited at Baylor, it was pretty much between Baylor and Georgetown. And I just really loved that Baylor was building their program. I loved what Marcy and Paul and Chuck were advocating, that you could come into something that was new as opposed to a legacy, and then you could leave your mark on that. So my freshman year was very rough. I'm sure that we'll talk about that later and in my life lessons of the years, the tough year. But my sophomore year, we made history at Baylor by advancing to the second round of NCAA tournament. And then my junior year was just amazing. We won the Big 12 tournament. We were 19-1-5, and we made it to the Sweet 16, where we actually, and I'm going to say tied your alma mater in because we lost in PKs, but I'm still holding on to the fact that we tied on your iconic field, and they actually went on that year to become national champions. And then my senior year, I had the honor of being captain, and then I ended my career with playing the second most minutes in school history. So there's no way I hold that statistic anymore. I haven't checked or have any idea, but that was just, I'm so grateful for my time there. It was really amazing.
So actually, that's funny you mentioned that, because I forgot. I used to like say it all the time when I was going to UNC. But the reason I went to UNC was actually because I was a soccer player growing up. So growing up, seeing, you know, the shirts being ripped off, Mia Hamm playing, like my dream was to go to UNC to play soccer. And I was nearly good enough to play on their soccer team. However, that's like volleyball kind of opened that unique door. So I actually am a huge soccer fan. That's my little... why I actually went to UNC.
I have no idea, Emily.
I was good. But then I switched to goalie one year because the running and conditioning got like crazy. And then they're like, we needed a goalie. And my coach was like, hey, if anyone wants to be goalie, you can run half at practice. And I'm like, sweet. And actually, like, goalie is pretty similar to volleyball defense. And so then it kind of transitioned well. Okay. And so what are you up to now after you're done playing at Baylor?
So I am now a teacher and a coach and a fitness instructor. I've taught high school English for the past 7 years, and I've been coaching soccer ever since as well. So I've coached junior varsity boys and varsity girls, and then now I'm also a Shred 415 fitness instructor.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard Shred for 15. What is that?
So it's a high intensity interval workout. It's instructor led. You spend, normally our classes are 60 minutes, but with COVID they're now 50 minutes, and you spend half of the time on our amazing Woodway treadmills and then half the time on the floor. The entire workout is tailored to how you want to make it, whatever weights you want to pick up, whatever speed that you want to go. You can be quite literally have walk in a shred and have never worked out before. And then you could also be a triathlete Olympian and still get an amazing workout. It's all about the community. It's all about uplifting each other. It's all about just empowering and working collectively, which is obviously so nice because you don't really get that, you know, once you graduate college or once you leave sports. So I love the community aspect.
Oh, I love that, because I did something similar, probably one of your competitors, so I won't give them a shout out. But when I was pregnant, I can like go and chill and walk on the treadmill and literally give 10% that day, as bad as it sounds, but that's better than 0%. So I love the adaptability of those types of classes when walking on an incline is better than sitting on the couch. That's awesome. Oh, I love things like that. And a nice way to stay involved in sport along with coaching. It's hard to give it up. And we're going to touch on that a little later, but that's awesome. You're finding a way to stay involved still with a passion. Mm-hmm. Okay. So speaking of, you already alluded slightly to your freshman year, but what were some of the main struggles you experienced during your playing career?
I struggled most with identity and comparison. So for my identity, when I went on my official visit to Baylor, they lost to Mizzou. The weekend we were visiting, they lost to Mizzou 5-0. And having started almost at every single point on any team, I think I was just this little cocky, you know, senior who was like, oh, okay, well, you know, they're rebuilding the program and like they're recruiting me. And, you know, there's going to be girls that are better. But like, I mean, this team, this is not good. So my freshman year, I got in there and it was very intense and a lot harder than I anticipated. And I was super far from home. And obviously, I mean, the great thing about being on a team and especially playing a Division I sport is everybody is busting their ass. Like, you are sisters off the field, but on the field, you are competing hard every second because everybody wants to play. And so I think with that mentality, that was really hard for me, because when I wasn't playing, and when I saw my minutes dwindle, it was just so hard for me. And then it was kind of serendipitous. Like, one of our best defenders just actually had a loss of heart. Like, I would go and hang out with her, and I remember one day she was like, if I had half of the heart that you had, she was like, I actually realized that I wanted to quit by talking to you, which sounds weird. But she was like, I just can tell how much that you love this. And I don't feel that same way. So it was literally her quitting the team that made this like slight opening possible for a couple of us defenders to compete. Several games, I didn't play anything. And then towards the end, we were playing Seattle University and I just happened to play really well. And that was, I think, what just put me back on my coach's map, I guess. And so that was just really, really hard because, again, my identity was I've traveled all this way. I'm 2,000 miles away from home. I remember this weekend, my parents came down and I didn't play on Friday. I didn't play on Sunday. I was bawling, crying because you think that your worth is based off of how many minutes you have or what, if you're contributing, right? And it takes realizing how much a team operates based off of the person who plays no minutes to the person who's playing 100 and the mental strength that it takes to still cheer on your teammates and still want the best for them. I mean, that's just a lesson you have to learn by not playing any minutes. And I'm actually grateful for that time because I would have never learned how to be a good teammate had I gone through that chapter. And then the thing that I also, so obviously identity, when you're not playing, you feel kind of silly or useless. But then when I started playing, I just had such bad imposter syndrome. I assumed my teammates were always mad at me. I never felt like I played good enough. I focused so much on my flaws. And I don't know. That was definitely, I think I even psyched myself out in games. Like all the games that I felt like I didn't play very well were because I was just focusing so much on comparison. And one of the sayings that really stuck out to me is one of my coaches would say, you can make 8 mistakes in a game, but don't make mistake number 8 be because of mistake number 3. And I think I was definitely that player who I would make mistake number 8 was because of mistake number 3, because I kept fixating. So that those are definitely my two struggles: identity, comparison, feeling imposter syndrome, and just never feeling quite good enough, which now I look back and I'm so sad that I wasted so much of that time when I could have been so confident.
Yeah, I can relate to that. And actually, I have a question for my Taylor. When did you find out you were redshirting your freshman year? Like, was that something that like when she's talking identity, did you come in knowing like, okay, my freshman year is a redshirt, or like, how did that work for you?
Yeah, that's interesting. So when I was listening to Taylor's story about how she kind of compared herself to others, especially her freshman year, and kind of dealt with playing time, I could really relate to that. So to answer your question, Emily, no, I had no idea that I was going to. Well, okay. So I guess like our coaches like alluded it like to my parents at some point when I was a senior, but granted, I come from a family, like no one in my family could even tell me what a red shirt is. Like I was the only athlete. Nobody watched sports. You know, I thought I was going to come in and like do great. It was quite the opposite. So Taylor, I totally understand your freshman year kind of woes because I went through the same thing, but not only was I not good enough to play with the rest of the girls and unprepared, but like also like I was totally barred from playing. They were like, no, you don't even get a chance. Like you're redshirting.
Yeah, can't even travel. Can't even, like, there's so many things that people don't really get with redshirting that like that they don't realize you're traveling different. Even like the things in practice, like a lot of practices are revolved around like scouting and starters are on this side. Like there's like a lot of things that, you know, people think it's all, and it is, there's definitely benefits to redshirting. That's, I feel like could be a whole different episode, but like, it is really, really tough, especially. So my freshman year kind of opposite of like, instead of having someone, well, quit eventually to open up a spot, I had a senior from another university transfer that was my position. So I thought I was going to be starting like the whole time until like during preseason, we got a transfer in my position. And I was like, wah, wah, wah. Like it was crazy. And then I split, like there's three in our position for only 2 spots. So I had some playing time, but I would get like literally tournament team, top 10 players among all schools. And it would be benched the very next week. It was just so uncertain. And it was like, kind of embarrassing because, like, at UNC, like, I committed as a junior. I'm walking around my senior year of high school, like, wearing my Carolina shirt, like, what's up? Going to Carolina. And I come home for Thanksgiving, and it's like, or I didn't come home for Thanksgiving, winter break, I came home. And they're like, how'd it go? And I'm like, oh
my gosh, I feel that.
We didn't make the NCAA tournament, and I played like 4 weekends.
That is me. Yes.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of freshmen like have that expectation, and it's not realistic. Like,
totally.
Emily, you just said it. Taylor, you just said it. And I said it. Like, all three of us said, like, we had this idea in our mind that we were going to come in and make an immediate impact. And, like, and then, of course, like, you get there and you realize, oh, wait, like, playing college athletics, like, much less Division I athletics, like, that is hard to do. And like, these women are like at the top of their game. Everyone who's there like has it. You're not special. Like, the only thing that's going to set you apart is like time, experience, and putting in a ton of hard work. Like, once you get to that level, you don't just show up and like, you know, have a spot. Well, some freak of nature athletes do, but most of us aren't those people. Yeah. And another thing you said, Taylor, that I just wanted to touch on really quickly is how you said, like, you came in and you had maybe some confidence issues because you weren't playing, but then you had imposter syndrome later when you were playing. And I can totally relate with that. Like, I feel like, and I don't even know if this is something that people who do, like, immediately as their freshman in college start playing, like, grapple with. But I know for me, and it sounds like maybe for you, like, when you come in and you literally are told that you're not good enough to play and you have to earn your spot, like, there's something, okay, obviously, like, you're proud of earning your spot and, like, you worked hard to get that and you deserve to be there. But also in the back of my mind, I really struggled with when I was a starter and did start playing, like, away, but like, am I actually good enough? Because like, I was in year 3 and 4, but I was still in the back of my mind, subconsciously, like, internalizing year 1 when I was like redshirted. Oh, so yes. I don't know if you.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. The subconscious internalization, I think, really, you know, in terms of progression, like, freshman year, what changed between freshman and sophomore year? Preparation. So I knew going into sophomore year, I felt more prepared. We started training with guys. We were training twice a summer. I knew the preparation happened. But then what happened in my sophomore year is I started and was playing a ton. And then I had a really bad weekend. I remember playing OU and OSU. And the senior who went in for me just had a lights out and lights out games. So she started starting more. And number one, as women, number two, as competitors, we look around. And number three, when you're playing, y'all understand, like, volleyball is made up of different positions with different strengths, obviously same with soccer. But so when you're in the position, quite literally, you don't really see your strength because you're like, oh, I'm just playing my role. And I think that gets really dangerous when someone comes into your spot, technically has the same gifts that you do. Oh, you can serve long balls well. Oh, you have good vision. So then you start to ask yourself, well, why am I different? Oh, and then if you already are self-conscious, you're like, you know what? They are better. And then you feed into that a little bit more. Like, you know what? I don't deserve to start. Oh, no, you know, I don't. And then it just becomes this horrible, I don't. Like you said, the internalizing subconscious. And so what it takes to pick yourself back out of that is, number one, coaches who can speak really well to your individual differences is like, makes a world of difference. Like, coaches and teammates who actually see you and know you. And then second, just that internal monologue that you have to develop of like, no, like, okay, even if you're not the best, you're still going to give it your all, or whatever your internal monologue is. How would you say that y'all managed to foster internal confidence?
I think it gets told, and this is the hard thing, someone has to tell you, like, almost someone has to tell you no, and you have to overcome it And it takes time. So like I'm thinking back to my size. I'm extremely short for a volleyball player. I am 5'9". Like I lied on all my college questionnaires and said I was 6 foot. And
that's amazing.
Wow.
And yeah. And I was like, all right, come see me. I'll wear my extra layer up on socks and wear some nice Mizunos with an extra heel.
That is amazing.
And I was just super, super short. And so, you know, I'll never forget when I was 14 years old, I was on like the elite team that was winning, you know, national championships every year. But my coach told me, like, just so you know, Emily, you are going to have to look at, and there's obviously nothing wrong with this, tier three, you're going to look at Division II and Division III schools to play in college. Like, I'm just helping you out for recruiting. You're probably done growing. This is the reality of the situation. I know at 13, you're looking at Big Ten, but you haven't grown and everyone else has now passed you. So, wow. And I was like, that's not what I want. So I had time to like work really hard and like deal with those confidence issues as a 15-year-old. So by the time I got to college, I'm chilling. I'm like, yeah, I'm the shortest person. If you look on my Tar Heel Blue like website, my freshman year roster, I was listed as 6 foot. And then by my senior year, I was 5'8 or 5'9 because my coaches were like, all right, this girl doesn't have to lie anymore. Like,
this is a lie.
No one needs to be like, they were actually trying to downplay my height because they're like, no, she is good and she is worthy and she can be respected even though her height isn't there. But it took like 10 years to like get, like, by the time in college, I'm like, no, I knew I had to overcome X deficiency. Like, when someone points out your deficiency or you're able to be self-aware of the deficiency, mm-hmm. and then work through it. It takes a lot of previous success, right? And so if you haven't had that experience, like I was a national championship champion when you're as like a 16-year-old, like I was recruited from these top schools. Like it was easy for these external sources to be like, I don't think you can do it. And then immediately like 2 years later say no. But if you don't have that, man, like that's a lot of self, like to get that internally by yourself.
Mm. Yeah. Tough. But you proved it to yourself though, Em, when you got there though, because like, your freshman year, you said like you didn't play that much. So, I mean, I remember, and it's so funny because like, I only remember like senior Emily, obviously, who was like this amazing leader, like amazing player and teammate. And I don't know. Obviously, you did a lot of work like between your freshman year and your senior year to be the person that you were when I got there. So I think that alone, just like putting in the work, and you never gave up on yourself. And I can say that for me too, even though I had those moments of like, you know, self-doubt, I never like doubted that I could do it, if that makes sense. Mm. Like I had self-doubt, but never doubted that I could do it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I said that twice.
No, well, Emily, I want to go back because you're actually right. I had a really similar story where I went to Clemson soccer camp and we drove down and you know how those soccer camps go, like you can get picked to be in the higher group. And so to train alongside and then you would scrimmage the Clemson players. So I got, yeah. And I was in that higher group the whole week. I actually felt like I did really well. And at the end of the camp, the Clemson coach looked at me and was like, yeah, I don't know if you'll ever play Division I. And I remember like my mom and I were shocked. I like cried the whole way home. And that was the first time I had external naysayer. And I was like, oh, okay. So that obviously inspires you to be like, oh, just watch me. Mm. So
it's easier to tell someone else, no, I can do this than yourself, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like you're proving it to them instead of, I don't know, maybe I think that's it for me at least. I was like, I'm going to prove you wrong instead of like, if they wouldn't have said that, I probably wouldn't have worked so hard, honestly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think a lot of people don't realize the power of their mind. And so did y'all just have like internal mantras that you were, I would love for listeners to take away some kind of mantra. Cause I think a lot of the time I'm listening to someone's like, oh, you just got to work hard, work hard, work hard. But I'd love if we could have like a tangible line or tangible, you know, piece of advice that someone can apply if they're struggling with that mental, you know, imposter syndrome or taking themselves.
Yeah. No. So I love that because I did have one that, like my main one was always like, I am a great teammate. Because at the end of the day, maybe I've messed up a bunch of things, but I know my teammates didn't know they know it wasn't on purpose. They know I did all the work. I work hard in practice. I work hard in film. I do my study. I am a good teammate. And therefore, when the game's on the line, it was like my high school volleyball team, shout out Bree Isaacson. When the game's on the line, winners want the ball. We said that every timeout. She would say, when the game's on the line, winners want the ball. And it's like, okay, under pressure, winners 100% of the time want the ball. I would yell, shout out to every setter I've also had, because I would yell at them, like, you give me the ball. Like, this is in my control. I can't control what other people do. But so you want to be a good teammate that you know that when you make a mistake, no one would ever be mad at me, because I, you know, they know I'm a good teammate. And when the game's on the line, winners want the ball. You'll never regret. I never regretted getting blocked on game point. Mm-hmm. Never. Like, I'd be mad at myself, but I have never, ever, ever been mad that I had a hitting error. Yeah.
You went for it.
Taylor, yeah. How about you?
So this is interesting. Actually, I was talking to a sports psychologist just a few months ago, and we were talking about performance anxiety, which is what we're talking about now. And I told him, I was like, so I used to, when I was a junior, senior in college, write on the inside of my wrist, like, I'm enough. And like, because I knew that I was dealing with, like, again, those kind of internalized beliefs that, like, I wasn't good enough, maybe because, like, I didn't come from, like, a good high school or a high school that had good volleyball or a club or state, for that matter, South Carolina, like, just didn't have good volleyball. And, like, I came in very, like, behind in terms of, like, my fundamentals and stuff. But, you know, I was athletic and eventually grew, but I still felt like, I remembered just not being good enough. And those were things I internalized. So I would write on my wrist, like, okay, I am enough. And like, another thing I would try to remember is like, I'm more than my sport. Like, mm-hmm. because I think that I just had so much like pent up inside of me and like strive so hard to like prove, you know, my coaches, my teammates, even myself, that like, I'm not just that like underdeveloped, like girl from South Carolina who, you know, can't pass a ball or whatever. Like, I put so much energy into finally making my way on the court. And when I told Dr. Parnum that, and it worked, by the way, those mantras, sometimes they worked, most of the time they worked. But when I told Dr. Parnum that I had this mantra, I am enough, written on my wrist, he was like, are you still having to write that on your wrist today? And I was like, like, yeah. That's deep. And he was saying like, a lot of the time, the anxiety that we feel or the self-worth issues that we feel that we face in sport, like those aren't rooted necessarily in sport. Like those go a lot deeper. And like, there was another time in our lives that we were told that we weren't good enough. I thought that was interesting. Like he like got in my head.
Yeah. Like, oh, mic drop.
Right. Yeah. Oh, and he's right.
Yeah. Wow. That, I mean, that's awesome. I think all four of those are really just hitting on, I think, what people can take away. Number one, Emily, I love the list that you said when you were like, being a good teammate, and you actually started to get into some concrete behavior. So like, I watch film, I study, and then you said all of the things, because if your teammates watch you, and I'd love to, this is one of my takeaways that I want, you know, current athletes to have, but if you watch your teammates and you know that off of the court, off the field, on the field, that they're doing what it takes, taking care of their bodies, eating the right nutrition, you know, sending that encouraging text to your teammate after a bad game or saying that comment, then people can rely on you in those clutch situations. They'll give you the ball. Like, and that's your second one. Winners want the ball. And I think that is the difference between elite programs and not so elite programs, is everything that goes on off of the field. But ultimately it's a sense of community where you look over your shoulder and you know that the girl next to you is working just as hard as you are. And then, yeah, Taylor, you're right about, I am enough. I don't think it's even possible for us not to talk about, you know, women in sports and not have this feeling that we're not good enough in some capacity. And however we can encourage, you know, young women to feel super confident about their bodies, about their decisions, about whatever it is ultimately going to serve a lot of people really well. Because I think we're all insecure about something. It'll play out in a sport, but it's amplified when it's a sport because it's also, again, tied to your identity. So I think that those are all really helpful pieces and mantras to help encourage people if they ever struggle with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a big, you know, a big issue and this insecurity. And I'm curious from both your athlete lens, coach lens, retiring athlete lens, like from we talked about identity, right? We had this trouble of identifying our role or, you know, our place or our confidence. But once you even skip your sport, like your whole life, like we're all generally our muscles, composition tends to gain muscle easier than non-athletes. We are sometimes taller. We are sometimes have those lean, long muscles, different body types that are ideal for sports, which is really hard off the court while you're playing the sport. But then once you retire from sport, you now have a body type that isn't necessarily needed anymore. Your whole, like that community you were talking about is all basis around, and you're enough in your skills and your practice and your teammates. So how was, I guess, the transition for you going from being an athlete, that being your identity there, to retiring from your sport from Baylor?
So, well, there's a lot of, number one, I think if you're just talking about body types, I mean, even in my group chat with all of my old college teammates, we'll send photos to each other and one person, two people will just be like, oh gosh, I was so big then, or oh gosh, look at how much bigger I was. And we, you know, comment on our weight or we comment on, you know, yeah, our muscles, and we automatically criticize. And that is just devastating because I've really been able to cultivate this attitude, but it took a couple rough years. So basically, 2 years of health problems. This took me busting my hump in the gym, crying and crying over how I looked in the mirror, never being satisfied with myself. And then finally just learning about weightlifting, learning about what my body responds to, like literally tailoring my workouts to, okay, well, what do I like to do? Taking the pressure off of myself, like really telling myself, your body has, because right after we finished college, we signed up for a half marathon. So we ran the half marathon. That was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Oh my, have y'all ran half marathons?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Hell no.
Holy cow. Wow. It was so hard. And so my body has done that. And then I just think back to my soccer memories. Hey, you played 120 minutes. Hey, you thinking about all of our intense workouts. Hey, you dedicated 4 years of your life when a lot of your friends were not, you know, making the sacrifices that you were and making other decisions. So now, if I want to take a week off just because I want to, cool. If I want to, you know, now I don't set like timers on runs, and I just feel a sense of freedom because I'm like, who cares? Who cares what my time is? At the end of the day, like, did I feel good? And then I've realized that this is all a process. I don't have anything to prove to anybody anymore other than ultimately getting myself to be the healthiest mentally, physically, emotionally person that I can be. And that's recognizing that this is going to be quite literally a marathon and not a sprint.
Yeah. I feel like it's so easy coming out of athletics when, okay, you were being yelled at every single day to work out. Like there was no like optional lifting or optional practice. Like you were expected to show up there, and like our bodies, obviously we got stronger. We were in the best shape of our lives. And like, that's just how it goes when you're in such a structured environment. But then transitioning out, like you said, it's so hard. And like, I've heard this from the Virago Project's community, like girls who are in it now, like just a year out of college and like struggling with finding a workout routine or struggling with her diet. And like, I remember like the transition, and I'm sure you guys do too. Like your metabolism is like super, super high. And like, it changes over the course of like 2 years when you come out, because obviously like when you're a college athlete, like you need up to like, or even more, like 3,000 calories a day just to maintain the muscle that is on your body. Like that's a lot of food. And like, that's normal when you're in college. And like, as your metabolism shifts and like your workout shifts, like your body changes, and it's just a really weird time. Oh, but like, I'm totally with you, Taylor. Like, and I'm 4 years out of college now, and I feel like just in the last 2 years, I've felt like, okay, I can stop trying to, obviously like your goals that you make, like, I think it's okay to want to look good. You know, I think that there's a fine line, like where you need to watch where you're taking that too seriously. But like, you know, you brush your hair every morning. Like some people put on makeup in the morning, like you brush your teeth, like to make sure they're clean and don't look like they have plaque in them. Like you're allowed to like groom your body to a certain extent to make you feel good. But if you're obsessing about how it looks, like that's where the line's drawn. Mm. And if it's like taking a toll on your other life, and what you said about exercising more intuitively, like I couldn't identify, like I couldn't relate to that more than I do right now.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're in a really like intuitive spot with your movement. And I'm just like realizing all the benefits of like intuitive exercise too. And like, I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
So I have kind of like a weird, slightly unrelatable, but it'll have a point. I grew up with, I'm really, really lucky. My mom, that I've talked to her now recently about like how she viewed eating and health and dieting and her body image. And she had a rule growing up with me that, you know, she never talked negative. She did Weight Watchers. I never knew it. She was never dieting. She was always eating healthy. I never knew about sizes. It was very pure and great. And like really did that. I started getting like lots of pressure with my body image during, like once I started competing with these girls going through puberty, and like I had boobs, no one else had boobs. I was like, I have extra fat. Like this is, and it was just my body type, right? And I've always been about 10 pounds heavier than my teammates of similar sizes, 10 to 20 pounds heavier. And that's just the way it is. And the comparison factor, going back to the first, was my hardest thing with my body image. And I, you know, every time I take a picture or someone posts something on Facebook, I'll still like notice, like that's the first thing I'll notice until, so this is where I don't know how I can capture this. And like, I would eat fine, but not great. Like I would eat what I would want. I got pregnant, and all of a sudden it wasn't for me. It was, I lost so much weight my first trimester because I am not drinking. I am walking. I am eating so clean because for some reason, like why could I not have that same self-love for me that I have for, so I'm trying to figure out a way that I can capture that. And even now still too, that happiness and like stayed with me. So I don't know how I can like, I just want to tell everyone your body, like we have been elite athletes. Your body has done amazing things for you. Like for some people, it's gotten them a $200,000 scholarship to play these elite sports, had you these, like love your body. Like your body is so, 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 like I wish I could figure out before that.
Oh, no,
I'm not going to be remembered as an athlete. Like I, just like my mom, she's not remembered by me of what size jeans she wears, right? So why do we put such weight on how much we weigh, how much arm fat we have, if our thighs touch, if really what I remember most about my mom and my teammates is, you know, their compassion, their passion, their patience, their sense of humor, how much they can make me laugh, how much they were there for me in tough times. Like when someone describes me, like, honestly, I don't want their first thing to be like, oh, she's a smoke show, right? Like, I would love if what they described me as was kind, smart, witty. I would love if I was a good teammate, a good captain, an awesome volleyball player. Like, why do we put so much weight onto our bodies when that's not how we remember others, but we want to remember ourselves that way?
Oh my gosh. I could shout this from the rooftops. Number one, women, I want you to ask yourself, if you have a rough relationship with your body, How did your mother talk about herself? I have had so many conversations with different people, and there's even like TikTok videos or videos where the mom is, you know, in the mirror and just like picking apart her skin, and her daughter interrupts her. She's like, "Mom, you don't say that. You're beautiful." Like, we were always listening. So whenever my mom or anybody was criticizing, you know, negative self-talk, well, that gets internalized into you. And so, Emily, I love that your mom, like, instead of saying a diet, she said, "No, I'm eating healthy," because even just switching the language that you say, like, "Oh, my body is this." No, start changing the language. No, my body is for movement. My body is, I love my body. What kind of language and can you say to shift, to get that perspective? Like what, and I love that you said that, Emily, what has your body been able to give you? And like, you have literally made a human life, like the coolest, most biggest,
good thing I'm an English teacher,
the biggest blessing, miracle. And, you know, for some of us, and I think that's why it could be really dangerous for, if there was ever athletes where they didn't have that full ride scholarship. And so, you know, you think about yourself, "Oh, I'm only 25%, or when you were a walk-on, "Oh, I'm only this." And we start looking at our deficit mindset. Do not look at the deficit mindset. We have to start getting so appreciative for just the little things, like, "Wow, I'm so grateful for my breath. Wow, I'm so grateful," you know, the attitude of gratitude. But then even thinking bigger, like, "Oh, I'm able to," and then yes, you can start feeling in the workouts. Yes, you can say all of those things. But yeah, how do we get young girls, and how do we get young girls to love their body?
So I'm not sure if you guys have ideas of like how, like, because I think I could have had this happiness without having a child 100%. Something didn't click until it, and you don't need to have, you know, women do not need to have children to have this type of fulfillment, I am very confident in. But I don't know how to, I think you should just see it, right? So I know Taylor personally. And when she said she was not happy about her body, right? Like, I want to hug her. I want to tell her that, but it's not about what I think of Taylor.
Yes. I think that because that's what we all keep saying. Like, you know, you could tell me I have, you know, different parts of my body that I'm insecure about. And it doesn't matter if people have tried to reassure me. It really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the number of compliments, because I have to believe it. So I guess, like, to be transparent, how have I been able to get into that, you know, as Taylor and I've been saying, that intuitive place? Well, number one, I've really thought back to all that I've overcome, all that my body has been able to handle, all that my body did during those 4 years at Baylor, even before that. I've tried a bunch of different workouts, and so like, oh, it's so cool that my body can do yoga, can do weightlifting, it can do spin, it can do, and that's why I think it's helpful to change up your routine. And then I think it also did just come with setting small goals for myself and accomplishing them. So like that's why I love weightlifting. Like, you start out at a 5 pound, and then you know that you are getting stronger quite literally because you're able to lift more. So yeah, you know, though, just setting those little goals for myself and then meeting them definitely gave me confidence. And then I think it really just comes down to this notion, like, I, because of my faith, I've had to like really remind myself that I am a creation. I am my own creation. This is what people need to know. And this is what I feel so strongly about. There will never be another you. There will be no one else who shares your exact DNA, who has your exact look, your exact body. Like, you are unique and you are special and you are wonderful the way that you are. And that's going to feel, you're going to have to say it to yourself. You're going to have to say these things. I am beautiful. I am special. I am strong. And you're going to have to start all of the sentences with I. It's like, Emily, you just said, "Oh yeah, I could tell Taylor you are beautiful," but the language in your brain has to be "I am," and then fill in the blank. And you got to do repetition after repetition after repetition until it just starts to become your inner mantra.
Okay, so let's get a Cliff Notes summary for everyone. We just hit them with a lot. So what, if we all had to pick like our favorite few things of how to successfully transition even let's stick with even body and feel that body empowerment. What has worked for you that you wish you could spread to other people?
I'll go first. I would definitely say learning how to eat and exercise intuitively. Those are totally key. Mm-hmm. Stop putting so much structure and expectations around how and when you eat or exercise or what. And just trust your body and your mind to make the decision for you. And go to therapy if you need to.
Yes, exactly. Taylor said, start with your mental health. That's what I would say. Everything mm-hmm. came back to my body image got better when my mental health got better. So if mm-hmm. you're having, your body is ultimately a manifestation of your internal world. So check in, what are you ingesting literally into your mind and into your body, and figure out what do you need to take out in order for you to be able to become that loving presence and take out anything that's not love
and put in everything that is love.
Yes, exactly.
Including cookies.
Including chocolate chip cookies always.
I just ate like 3 and I'm so happy.
Oh, I saw on Instagram. Is that what came? The cookies?
Yes.
Okay. So mine is, I guess similar. So try to find what has made you happy in the past, right? So with sports, I really enjoyed the statistics of it. So I loved watching my statistics improve. I liked watching my weight room gains improve. I liked, good times decreasing, positive times increasing. So that was really what motivated me and made me happy when I was checking off those more numerical victories. So I learned really quickly that instead of getting bogged down in the dangerous traps of the statistical, so stop watching my weight number. That is a very bad one to keep track of every week in my little MyFitnessPal app. That was not bringing me happiness, even when I would hit my goal weight. Rather, I really enjoyed bench pressing. So that was like one of the things I liked. It was one of my favorite exercises. I have short arms, a large chest. I am very good at it. And so I slowly, whenever I get back into weightlifting, I would always like go and just do dumbbell press. I would do like, I would just focus around an exercise that I like, that I could see improvements on in a very healthy way that was never, not maxing like I was in college, but just something that I'm like, this is what I'm good at. This made me happy. And this is increasing. So while the half marathon was very difficult, I really liked that as a goal and something to like work towards. So I don't really care. My goal was to finish. So try to recreate, find, what makes you happy and kind of recreate it. That's what's been successful for me in a healthy, planned manner.
Yes, that's perfect, Emily. I think that is, find the exercises that you love. Go back and recreate all of the things that before you started overthinking, go back to those moments before you started internalizing all those, negative messages, who and what did you believe about yourself, and try to recreate that. That's perfect.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. We went all over the place. Let me see. Is there anything else that we haven't touched on? Because I know I kind of skipped around a lot and added a bunch.
No.
Is there anything else you want me to ask before I go to the anything else you want to add?
No. We've kind of talked a little bit about, like, I guess one question that we implicitly talked about this, but I really loved this notion of like the ideal lean non-muscular body type. Like, I guess I'm always so interested in the idea of femininity versus masculinity. Like, we've mm-hmm. talked about our body type, like, oh, like our actual relationship with our body. But I feel like exclusively with women, we are likened to, because muscles sometimes equal masculine, that we like, I think sometimes the transition is harder for those of us who lean more towards muscular as opposed to non-muscular. Like, that's just something that I really struggle with, is like lack of boobs. that's not feminine anymore. And that's probably the weirdest transition, I would say, battling having an athletic build post college and finding that beautiful and empowering has been a little bit of a difficulty, definitely.
No, I was always the tallest growing up. Then I matured really young. I was taller than all the boys. No one wanted to date me. I was the tall girl. Then for volleyball, I'm like, why can't I be taller? And now after, I was like dating and I'm like, oh, I'm taller than all these guys. Like, what do they think of that? But even I think volleyball and soccer is similar too, because like our quads and hamstrings are typically overdeveloped as well. Like, you know, the jeans, all that fit funny. Mm-hmm. And even when you're done playing, you may slim down some, but like, it's all going to be this imbalance that, you know, you look like literally there's not a world that I could have a thigh gap. Right. And I remember that was like a very big trend. It's society. It's the comparison. It's what is being reported by the media of, you know, female athletes. Like, you go even to like any female athletes on ESPN for a long time were like exclusively these beach volleyball players in bikinis, tennis players in skirts. Mm-hmm. Like, didn't it only just recently get reversed that tennis players could wear pants?
Wow. I don't know.
I think literally just in the last year when like Serena Williams, like, not gonna lie, I'm looking this up right now. So hold on. Okay. So in 2018, Serena Williams wore that cat suit. Remember?
Kind of.
And then she got ripped apart by the president of the French Tennis Federation, saying that, you know, she can't play. She doesn't respect the game. And then that very next time she wore this huge, like, pink Nike tutu skirt. And then, like, everyone just kind of, like, did random, like, a few other person did, like, Simona Halep, I think is how you say her name, wore this, like, huge open skirt that, like, huge slit.
Oh my gosh, yes, Serena tutu. Yes.
Yeah, for like big black tutu thing. And then they all just kind of like, and then after that, they kind of changed it from what it, but yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Oh my gosh. But, yeah, you're so, oh wow, this would be so, oh, that's so cool. I'm happy that you pointed this out. I would love to teach about that, actually, about like, oh, there's so many different, oh, that's so cool.
All right, Taylor, I know we've covered a lot. I just want to say before we go, well, one, thank you. And is there anything else you want to add, a message to current or retired athletes?
Current athletes, I would say it's worth it. Sacrifice it all, the time, the energy, fully invest. Don't just be halfway there. This is a chapter that can never be repeated. And while that might make it seem like there's so much pressure, I don't mean it to be. I just want it to encourage you to just absolutely soak it all in. What I remember from my career is actually, first and foremost, how much I loved my teammates, how much I loved my coaches, and just how much I wish I could have taken care of my mind, my body, my mental health sooner. I think it would have made me a better athlete, an even better teammate. And so I just soak up the true honor that it is to be an athlete. And to retired athletes, if you're struggling with identity, imposter syndrome, comparison, again, all that I want to say is you accomplish something that very few people can say that they can, and you are unique. There was only someone with your skill set. You contributed to an unbelievably high level of success, and that people are better for because of it. And I think that we are such a cool, awesome, unique community that I feel a privilege to be a part of. And I've just loved getting to rehash all these memories with y'all and find connections in our stories. And so thank you for this opportunity.
Oh my gosh. I want to give like a standing ovation. That was awesome. I think that like summarizes everything up perfectly and like took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much, Taylor, for coming on and sharing. And I'm not at all surprised that all of us seem to have had similar transition stories coming out of sports. So it was really cool to hear yours, and we really appreciate having you here.
Yeah, thank you for sharing, Taylor. It means really a lot.
Thank you so much for opening up, and thank you for this wonderful opportunity.
All right, the Virago Project will definitely stay involved with your little Insta story with you when we release this. But so we will definitely stay in touch with you. Thank you so much, Taylor.
Okay, awesome. Thanks.
All right, we'll be in touch soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, I think that podcast today was one of my favorites, with some actionable items that we can really take away, those mantras. I'm going to start reworking my own mantras in my everyday life. What do you think, Taylor?
Yeah, I thought she was so good. It's so evident when we were talking to her just how seasoned she is in all of this. And obviously, you know, she's a coach for young athletes. She's also a fitness coach. So it's just, she has this way of speaking life into people. And I thought that was so, so apparent when we were with her. So Taylor, thank you again. I know she's not here right now, but Taylor, shout out to you. Thank you for...
She better listen to it. So thank you, Taylor. Yeah,
you better get to the end. Thank you, Taylor, for just being with us and sharing your wisdom, because it truly, truly is needed.
All right. Thank you, Virago listeners, for another great podcast. Again, this was part three. Listen to all three, and we will start dropping them individually starting here next Tuesday. Thank you so much. We will talk to you soon. You guys have a nice week.
Bye.
Bye, guys.